ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, three people missing and more than 20 homes destroyed as bushfires ravage Victoria. Also, graziers in flooded North Queensland prepare for a cyclone to bring more rain. And the Minneapolis shooting death of a woman by ICE agents prompts painful emotions for the family of Australian woman Justine Damond-Ruscek, who died there in 2017.
This can't be happening again. Why in Minneapolis? Things haven't changed in America and unfortunately not in Minneapolis. I just thought Minneapolis is cursed.
First this evening to Victoria, where three people remain unaccounted for as several bushfires ravage the state. Authorities estimate at least 20 homes have been destroyed in the small town of Ruffey in central Victoria, and more properties are under threat in that area and the state's northeast and west as fierce winds hamper the firefighting effort. Kimberly Price filed this report.
Not looking good. Just got in here and it's turned. Got flame just in front of us.
In Tarkham in central Victoria, Paul Dunham races to help his sister-in-law protect her animal shelter. There are now more than 60 fires burning across Victoria, with over two dozen of those out of control. Dave Wortman is a farmer in Granyer in Victoria's northeast.
Yeah, I can see a lot of smoke and the odd bit of flame. It's along the Murray River, right on the New South Wales border. It's very mountainous. Yeah. We've got very strong winds here gusting at the moment from the northwest, and the fire is moving very quickly.
The Woolwa fire is currently moving away from Dave Wortman's property, but he says he's still on edge.
Oh, look, we're just trying to get through today at the moment. A change in the wind direction will cause us, even if it does get a bit cooler, a change in the wind direction will cause us a fair few hassles.
Many people are heeding authorities' advice to leave. Jim Billings is a resident of Upton Hill in central Victoria. He left his property on Wednesday and has been told it's been completely destroyed.
One minute you've got a beautiful home, which you love, and next minute, all gone. And then the big question, where to from here? How do I go? I was so in love with the community at Upton Hill and Avonall. And I've lived here for 14 years, and the thought of not being part of the community anymore is devastating to me.
Jim Billings took his dog Dulcie and a few irreplaceable photos with him.
I think I saved my life by deciding to leave when I did. And I've been telling everyone the only thing that will guarantee your safety is to leave.
For Logan Davey and Jenna Fowler, Thursday was meant to be spent enjoying the best moment of their lives, their engagement in Bonnie Doone in central Victoria. But their day of happiness quickly turned to panic.
Because we were so wrapped up in the moment, we hadn't checked our phones in a few hours.
And that's when a neighbouring farmer told the couple it was a good idea to leave.
We went and checked our phone, and the whole entire area that we were in had come up red and said, leave now. And then literally a couple minutes later, the black ash started coming over and landing on all the chairs and stuff.
This afternoon, strong gusts and wind changes have been threatening communities. David Nugent is from the State Control Centre.
Obviously a really dynamic, difficult situation across the state at the moment. We've got a number of fires happening, a number of new fires. Those northwesterly winds will get really strong as the change comes through. I was just looking at Horsham a moment ago, and you know the winds there were gusting to 80, 90 k's an hour. So you know the winds are certainly a factor for us.
Homes and infrastructure have been lost across the state, and David Nugent says three people remain unaccounted for door in the Longwood community.
We're really hopeful that we were able to locate those three individuals.
Personal hardship payments of up to $2,300 per family are being made available from the government. Jacinta Allen is the Victorian Premier.
In discussions with the Commonwealth, we have activated the personal hardship payment processes, and those payments are being made available from now, particularly through the Seymour Relief Centre, and further payments will be made available.
Bushfires are also burning in parts of Western Australia, New South Wales and South Australia.
Kimberly Price reporting. To Queensland now, where residents of the state's north are preparing for a cyclone to cross the coast. It's expected to make landfall early on Sunday morning between Cairns and Eyre, bringing damaging winds and heavy rainfall. In the state's northwest, floodwaters have already swept away tens of thousands of head of livestock, and communities there are worried by the prospect of more rain. Isabel Masali reports.
Farmer Nissa Curran finds it hard to describe what's happened to her cattle and sheep station in northwest Queensland.
I don't know whether I can actually put it into words. It's not necessarily a picture, it's more of a smell. Animals rotting, mould of death.
Her station is north of Julia Creek and has been devastated by flooding in recent weeks. She's only just been able to start assessing the damage. She's never seen it this muddy, but says among the dead cattle, there are signs of life.
I found a potty calf yesterday that looks like it's been scalded a bit by rain and eaten a bit by midges. Currently drinking quite a lot of milk and looking pretty well. So there's also that smell of hope at the end of it.
But she's concerned the rain has come so early this year.
Wet season doesn't traditionally actually start until the end of January, early February. And it's nearly pointless to start doing any fencing or anything like that until March because good chance we're going to get another weather event.
As the state faces another emergency, Queensland Premier David Crisafulli has reminded residents of Western Queensland they haven't been forgotten. At least 30,000 livestock losses have been recorded so far. That figure is from 50 stock assessments conducted by those on the ground.
The likelihood of stock losses exceeding this level by many times is real. And that's why it's important that we continue to lend support in every way that we can.
He says fodder drops are continuing and there's still a risk to animals from pneumonia and bacteria. But that's not the only threat.
Major flood warnings are current for the Horton and the Flinders River, and the Herbert is currently moderate to major. There's different parts of the Herbert. But there are many other catchments that are at minor level, and we are obviously watching those because they are water-filled area, and with those full catchments comes large risk of flooding, and that is a really big concern for us.
Extra police, emergency crews and resources have been sent to Queensland's north ahead of a tropical low. It's forecast to cross the coast between Cairns and Eyre either late tomorrow night or early Sunday morning. Matthew Colopy from the Bureau of Meteorology has warned it may become a cyclone.
At this stage, there's about a 50 to 60% chance of a Category 1 cyclone, so the lowest category of cyclone that we see. There's a very, very slim chance of it getting above that.
He says it's expected to bring damaging winds and heavy rainfall of between 250 and 350 millimetres over 24 hours.
River catchments in the region along the Cape are saturated due to heavy rainfall over the past week. So dangerous and life-threatening flash flooding and riverine flooding are a serious risk along the Queensland coast, particularly in areas between Hope Vale down to Eyre, including Cairns and Townsville. So those catchments through those areas.
In Townsville, Mayor Nick Demetto says local disaster authorities are on standby.
We're all taking this very seriously. People in Townsville should be taking it seriously. The problem is we're looking at the window right now and it's quite calm. This is what they call the calm before the storm, ladies and gentlemen. Just because the wind's not blowing right now doesn't mean it's not going to be blowing in 24 hours' time.
And while long-term residents may know the drill well, he's urged families new to the area to introduce themselves and learn how best to prepare.
That report from Isabel Masali and Rachel Hayter. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. Just a reminder, you can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. In the United States, the outrage over tactics used by immigration authorities is mounting after a Border Patrol agent today shot and wounded two people after stopping their vehicle in Portland, Oregon. It follows an immigration agent shooting dead a woman in Minneapolis on Wednesday. The death of 37-year-old Renee Good has brought back painful memories for the family of Australian woman Justine Damond-Ruscek, who was shot and killed by Minneapolis police officer in 2017. She'd called the police for help after hearing a disturbance outside her home. Her Sydney-based father, John Ruscek, told Nick Grimm Americans should feel ashamed about what's happening on their streets.
This can't be happening again. Why in Minneapolis? I just thought Minneapolis is cursed. So things haven't changed in America and unfortunately not in Minneapolis.
Obviously, the circumstances are very different this time around. It was an ICE agent involved on an immigration operation. Yet there are so many similarities as well. Does it surprise you that something like this has happened?
No, it doesn't. And I think you see that in the responses from the United States government to the ICE agents' actions. They immediately have formed opinions and made statements supporting the actions of that ICE agent. And I think that after a fair investigation, I would hope that this would be said to be a crime. What happened was a crime in my eyes.
You must feel a sense of frustration then that, given the comments made by the Trump administration on this latest shooting, they're either failing to learn the lessons of history or they're just disregarding them.
I think they're disregarding them. I think that members of the president administration, you know, they've been to some of the best schools in America, Yale Law School and so on like that. And they've come out and they've created, you know, organizations that are causing all of these problems. They have an agenda, as far as I can see. They seem to know what they want to do and are going about doing it. And it's happening with the ICE agents. They're being sent out onto the streets unencumbered with the rule of law. And they're being unleashed on the populace and told, this is what we want to happen. And it's causing people to live in fear. And it's the wrong thing. And they're given, they don't seem to be reined in at all. And their first response is violence.
John Ruscek, you are, of course, an Australian citizen now, but you were born in the United States. You must be very disturbed by witnessing incidents like this.
I am. I'm very unhappy with the course that America is following right now. And I think it's been developing over the last many decades of people, rather than promoting harmony, are promoting distrust of the others. And it's always a problem that, you know, the problem is not my behavior, it's not our behavior, it's their behavior. Once you start distrusting the others, then it's easy to increase the fear level over time, especially if those people in power continue to say that the others are the problem and not the solution is to stop them from coming to our country.
You obviously are indicating that you feel that this is more than just about the actions of the individual officers or agents involved, that there is an institutional problem here coming from the very top down.
Well, I mean, I trust in the decency of the vast number of Americans who are appalled by the behavior of ICE agents and government agencies that abuse the rule of law. So I'm always hopeful that the change will come. But it's such a tragic thing that it costs lives, the journey to justice. Cost lives. And from what I've seen of the ICE agent's actions towards that car, that vehicle, and that woman, I think all Americans should be ashamed of that agent's actions. I just don't understand where it comes from. I mean, the only reason to have a gun is because you're afraid. And is everybody in America afraid all the time? It's not a way to live.
John Ruscek is the father of Justine Damond Ruscek, who was shot and killed by a police officer in Minneapolis in 2017. He was speaking to Nick Grimm. In Washington, D.C., envoys from Denmark and Greenland are urging Trump administration officials to back away from any plans to take over the strategically important Arctic island. The U.S. President Donald Trump argues Greenland is crucial for the security of his country, and in his most recent comments told the New York Times that he, quote, had to possess Greenland and wasn't satisfied with just having the right to station troops there under a 1951 treaty with Denmark. The French President Emmanuel Macron is accusing the US of turning its back on its North Atlantic Treaty Organization allies. But the American Vice President J.D. Vance says European alliances won't stop Mr. Trump from taking over Greenland. Garana Gergic is the head of the global security team at the ETH Centre for Security Studies in Zurich, Switzerland. And I asked her to tell us more about how European leaders are feeling about the American threat to seize the Danish territory.
First of all, there is a sort of disbelief over how fast things are moving. It seems that Europeans are taking this very seriously and policymakers across the continent are not ignoring this sort of ramped up rhetoric. So there is a scramble to find a plan to try to stop him.
Are there any signs of what that plan might be as yet?
There is a kind of push to try to find a compromise, to basically get to a negotiated settlement where Donald Trump would see that he could get a win by basically getting an agreement through, you know, getting some advanced basing rights, that there could be some sort of mediation role for NATO to play in all of this. The worst scenario would be the one where Europeans would have to commit to sending a lot more troops to kind of provide some military assurances to Greenland at a time when, of course, all eyes are on the eastern flank of NATO alliance, on what's going or has been going on in Ukraine for the past 4 years. Then there are some middle ground solutions, whether they have to do with economic retaliation against the United States, again, which could come to hurt Europeans as well, or trying to match sort of the promises of potential resources flowing in or cash investments being thrown at Greenland from both sides. So the United States was at one time saying that it would buy Greenland from Denmark. So now Europeans are also considering that it would more than double the spending on Greenland under some of the new provisions for the long-term budget of the European Union.
Some analysts think the threat of military action by the United States to take Greenland is just a Trump negotiating tactic. Do you think Denmark would ever sell Greenland to the United States?
This would certainly be a precedent in terms of where we are in 21st century. So far, what we've heard from Denmark is that this is not an option that they are considering. Of course, Greenland, we have to underscore this, is a self-governing territory. They have their own government. It is part of Kingdom of Denmark, but of course, it has quite a lot of autonomy. And again, we should not ignore also the will of the people in Greenland who democratically already rejected closer association with the United States. But the issue here at hand is that in the context of NATO alliance, we have not seen the United States threaten basically the territory of another NATO ally in this way. So if the United States was to get serious and pursue this option, as the Danish Prime Minister said, this truly would be the end of NATO.
Would the NATO allies come to Denmark's aid and fight the Americans if they did decide on a military takeover?
I believe that there would be some sort of diplomatic or kind of compromise solution that would need to be worked out, because the stakes are just so great. I would have a very hard time seeing how European NATO allies would engage in this sort of battle that would already, I think, be predetermined.
What do you say to the American argument that Greenland is crucial not only to the security of the United States but to world security, and that the Europeans haven't done enough to make it what the US Vice President calls an anchor for world security?
There is some argument to be made there, but this is something that, again, NATO alliance could definitely do. There is no reason why United States would have to push this through unilateral means.
You mentioned the war in Ukraine. Does the United States posturing about Greenland distract NATO countries from the efforts to end that war?
This is certainly not a helpful development. It completely sidelines some of these efforts and makes it very hard for Europeans then to navigate how to go about, you know, trying to work on a deal with Americans for Ukraine, but at the same time trying to stand up to those same Americans over their territorial aspirations to basically absorb Greenland.
Garana Gergic is with the ETH Center for Security Studies in Zurich, Switzerland. The Prime Minister's calling of a royal commission into anti-Semitism and social cohesion has coincided with a fierce debate about free speech in South Australia. At least 40 authors have pulled out of next month's Adelaide Writers' Week after the organisers dropped Palestinian-Australian author and lawyer Dr. Randa Abdel Fattah from its lineup. Angus Randall has more.
Every year, Adelaide Writers' Week offers dozens of free talks and lively debates with authors from around the world. This year, Palestinian-Australian academic Dr. Randa Abdel Fattah won't be one of them.
I received an email with a letter from the board informing me that it would not be culturally sensitive for me to appear at the festival.
In a statement, the board for the Adelaide Festival, which runs Writers' Week, says it's not suggesting that Dr. Abdel Fattah or her writings have any connection with the tragedy at Bondi, but it would not be culturally sensitive to keep her on the program so soon after the Islamist terror attack.
So it's just an extremely racist and obscene attempt to associate me with an atrocity.
Dr. Abdel Fattah says Adelaide organisers were well aware of her pro-Palestine and anti-Zionist views when they booked her last year. She worries the Bondi attack will be used indefinitely to silence criticism of Israel.
At what point will Palestinians be allowed to be present in the public space without being constructed as threats and enemies?
Author and broadcaster Jane Caro is one of the dozens of writers who've pulled out of Adelaide Writers' Week in protest. She says a writers' festival should be a safe space for the discussion of ideas.
And we can't have a situation where anyone who speaks up for the Palestinian point of view on this question is shunned or shut out or called names or told that they're, you know, in some way racist.
Adelaide Festival and its Writers' Week program is primarily funded by the state government. South Australian Premier Peter Malinauskas says he didn't have a hand in barring Dr. Abdel Fattah, but he supports the call.
In her own commitment, her own stated objective is to deny Jewish people's safety.
In previous comments, Dr. Abdel Fattah has said Zionists, those who hold the nationalist ideology that Israel must be the home for Jewish people, have no claim or right to cultural safety. The term cultural safety refers to respecting the rights and traditions of a culture. Under most definitions, it does not refer to the physical safety of that culture's population. But it's an understatement to say not everyone agrees on where the line exists between criticism of Israel and Zionism and anti-Semitism. Norman Schuller is from the Jewish Community Council of South Australia. He led calls for Dr. Abdel Fattah to be banned.
Very simply, she has a litany of anti-Semitic talk and inciting hatred. I believe her conduct is entirely unconscionable.
She's spoken, as you say, very strongly about Israel and about Zionism. Can you just explain how that is an attack on all Jewish people, which, from what I understand, is very much the, you know, description of anti-Semitism?
Well, you're correct. Legitimate criticism of Israel, the same way as you would criticize another country, is legit. But the moment you are pointing at the religion, well, that's just not on.
Dr. Max Kaiser from the pro-Palestinian Jewish Council of Australia strongly disagrees. He says there's been a decades-long campaign to paint critics of Israel, like Dr. Abdel Fattah, as anti-Semitic.
They have an idea that Israel represents, isn't just a state like any other. It's a special representative of the Jewish people and represents all Jewish people. And in fact, criticism of Israel itself is inherently anti-Semitic because the state is Jewish.
Adelaide Writers' Week has removed its entire lineup from its website as it manages the changes. The festival will be held in February.
Angus Randall. And that's PM for this week. PM's producer is Nick Grimm. Technical production by Nick Drakoulis and Joram Toth. Have a great weekend. Good night.